Willkommen bei Traces of Light. Elsbeth Horbati nimmt dich mit auf die Suche nach Menschen und Gemeinschaften, die in diesen schwierigen Zeiten Mut machen.
Seit ich vor 1,5 Jahren mit meinem Podcast begonnen habe, sind die Nachrichten um uns herum nicht leichter geworden. Im Gegenteil. Krise, Kriege, Unsicherheit. Und so versuche ich, wie immer in meinem Podcast, den Blick so zu verändern und auf etwas zu richten, was uns kleine Lichtspuren geben können. Heute geht es darum, wie Menschen zueinander finden, sich unterstützen und neue Freundschaften entstehen. Das ist mir gestern passiert, als ich mit Robin Brevermann gesprochen habe. Eine Freundin aus den USA hat mir den Kontakt zu Menschen vermittelt, die von den massiven Entlassungen im Umfeld von der amerikanischen Entwicklungshilfe USAID betroffen sind. Ein Jahr ist es her, seit schätzungsweise über 10.000 Amerikanerinnen und Amerikaner sowie rund 200.000 lokale Personen weltweit praktisch von einem Tag auf den anderen gezwungen wurde, ihre Arbeit niederzulegen, Projekte zu verlassen und ihre Existenz neu zu ordnen. Hinter diesen Zahlen stehen Menschen, die über Jahre hinweg Beziehungen aufgebaut, Netzwerke geknüpft und Gemeinschaft begleitet haben. Ich selbst habe über 20 Jahre in der Entwicklungszusammenarbeit gearbeitet und weiß, wie langsam und sorgfältig solche Prozesse wachsen und wie viel Zeit es braucht, bis etwas wirklich funktioniert und gut unterstützt ist. Ich spreche heute mit Robin Brevermann, die in Honduras für Projekte arbeitete, die von der amerikanischen Agency for Development, USAID, finanziert waren. Ich spreche mit ihr auf Englisch. This is for our podcast, Traces of Light, and I'm here with Robin Brevermann. She used to work in Honduras for the agency, U.S. Agency for Development, in brief, USAID, or USAID, as we used to know it. And when I start talking to her, we find out we had many things in common. But this is another story. Right now, I want to know from Robin, how was that moment a year ago when President Trump decided to close down the agency? Where were you and what did you do?
First of all, thanks. I think this is a really important look or, you know, into what happened. I was in Honduras managing a big project with over a staff of over 50 people, lots of partners all over the country. And we got the notice before USAID Honduras got the notice. And basically it was to suspend operations until the review was going to happen. So we still held out hope that there was going to be, so our program would have some relevance. And at that point, we had built up to this scenario by reading the right wing's plan 2025 and preparing ourselves for various scenarios. And so while it surprised us, at the moment that we heard, which is around January 24th, 2025, we still held out hope. But it obviously increased our anxiety exponentially, specifically because our USAID contracting liaison and team in his office did not know we had to tell them.
Okay. So you had to tell them. How was that?
Oh, they were shocked. I mean, I think that they thought that, first of all, one of our program was considered the flagship program for USAID. And they really, it had received a lot of accolades in Washington. And I got an award for being the best chief of party through the company and my company. And so there was a lot of focus on us and a lot of hope, like I said. And then there was a lot of, again, shock from them, but hope as well. And so they wanted us to remain hopeful and think about how we could pivot to maybe meet some of the, or readjust our programmatic priorities. So we started to really internally with my thought leadership team think about that and keep ourselves hopeful.
Okay, but basically it meant you had to send 50 people to unemployment, including yourself.
Ultimately, yes, but it's useful to understand that this went in phases.
Okay.
So what happened is every day they would go through, they meaning DOGE, D-O-G-E team would go through or use kind of an algorithm to determine which programs around the globe were relevant or not to making America great again. And then they would publish that list. And so every day at 6 o'clock, we would wait to see if we survived the list. And basically, until I believe the end of February, we had survived. And then we got a letter that said we had to stop. But during that time, we had to go lean and mean because we wanted to ensure that we could still pay our staff and our company was paying our staff. But we had presented vouchers for reimbursement and there had been a stop on payment. So every company was different and our company had enough savings to protect their staff around the world. But also, you can't justify keeping programmatic staff on while you're not in the field doing programmatic work.
Mm-hmm.
The problem or challenge for us was that we also had payments due to our local partners. And as you know, from doing development work, they often live hand to mouth, month to month. And so they were being delayed in paying their staff and also some of their service providers as well. So it was a bad chain reaction that we tried to thwart as much as we could.
Mm. So it was over a period of a few months, basically?
So we started letting people go in March and, February and then in April. We had a very limited staff to kind of close out and do asset disposition.
Robin Brevermann erzählt, wie sie im Februar 2025 die Nachricht erhielten, dass auch ihre Projekte in Honduras eingestellt werden mussten. Von einem Moment auf den anderen kam alles zum Stillstand. Programme wurden eingefroren, Zuständigkeiten lösten sich auf und es war unklar, wer überhaupt noch Entscheidungen treffen konnte. Selbst ganz praktische Fragen wie die Weitergabe oder der Verkauf von Fahrzeugen blieben unbeantwortet. Am Ende nahm die Situation absurde Züge an. Die Autos mussten schlicht mit dem steckenden Schlüssel auf dem Parkplatz zurückgelassen werden, weil es in den USA niemanden mehr gab, mit dem sie eine geordnete Übergabe hätte abgestimmt werden können.
And one of the things that we had was we had a fleet of cars, but in order for us to sell the cars or donate the cars, it had to go through a whole procurement and asset disposition process that we couldn't do because nobody was working at USAID. And so we basically said, unless they could resolve the issue, we were all of us, not just my program, but all the programs that were funded by aid, were just going to go leave the cars with keys in it at their parking lot. And that forced them to say, wow, we need to do something. But remember, at that point, they were also limited because they were not given any instructions from USAID in Washington because everyone else was furloughed or let go as well. So the whole system stopped, like not just Honduras, the whole entire global system.
Exactly. And you're an example, or you're one of them. That's why I would love to talk to you because I also understand the region. So I can imagine that not only were 50 people left without a job, but as you said, you had local partners. That means local small NGOs or institutions who were paid by you. And were stopped being paid. So how many people would that involve, more or less? Just a guess.
My guess is over 200.
Okay.
And remember that we were in 10 cities. So in each of those cities, we had an office. And in each of those cities, we worked with schools and community boards and municipalities and families who were receiving trauma-informed care or crisis counseling or family counseling from us. And so all of that stopped as well. So it wasn't just who wasn't getting paid. It was who wasn't getting the services that we'd committed ourselves to do and provide.
Im April 2025 kehrte Rofin Breivermann zurück in die USA. Nicht, weil sie es wollte, sondern weil es absolut keine andere Möglichkeit mehr gab. Ein neues Leben musste beginnen, abrupt, ungeplant. Und doch zeigte sich mitten in all diesen Verlustes auch etwas anderes. Menschen, die sich wiederfanden, Gespräche, die Halt gaben und Netzwerke, die sie trugen und auffingen.
So you had to go back by April, more or less. You went back to the U.S.?
So I had no choice but to leave. And so and luckily for me, like I said, I feel very lucky that my company was able to honor their commitment to me, which was to repatriate me and my belongings back to the United States in a timely fashion, whereas others weren't so lucky because they were too overextended and waiting to get reimbursed. So a lot of my expat colleagues had to wait to have their stuff shipped or even to get their salaries paid. I wasn't in that situation. So again, I was quite fortunate, but yeah, it was quite sudden. And that meant that we also had to determine where we were going, which was also unexpected.
So where did you go?
We are in Texas, in San Antonio, and fortunately we had a house that was unoccupied that had been rented, so we were able to go back into that house.
Oh wow, that's a real top solution in a scary moment, no?
Yeah, we're so lucky. Again, you know, it was the opportunity. I think we needed to make sure that we had some sort of anchoring somewhere. And some community or some semblance of the community. Like I said, we used to live in San Antonio, so we had a little bit of a community and we had the house. So that was a start. And it turns out that our neighbor, a neighbor we didn't know prior, her father used to work at USAID. And so we had a lot in common. It was quite lovely. It was a nice way to kind of anchor back in.
Und dann unterhalten wir uns darüber, wie es nun für Sie und all die vielen anderen Leute weitergehen soll. Robin erzählt mir, wie wichtig es ist, sich Zeit zu nehmen, um Verluste zu verarbeiten und zu trauern und gleichzeitig neue Wege zu finden. Auch wenn es schwierig ist, geben Gemeinschaft, Erfahrung und Zusammenhalt Hoffnung, dass aus Krisen wieder etwas Neues entstehen kann.
I just think knowing that there's a network out there and also taking time to kind of process that and giving ourselves permission to kind of grieve what we lost, you know. And I think we tried to do that during the time we were still in Honduras, but I think just giving ourselves permission to continue to do that because it does ebb and flow. And then finding our voices somewhere else, I think that's important as well. So I think that's all part of it. It hasn't been easy, but it hasn't been, I mean, I have shelter, you know, I have some benefits. And so I think that sets us a little bit apart from other people. But I also think it makes us think about all the good things we did and what we can learn and take forward from that. And I think right now, the U.S. is currently suffering from some of those development lessons that we could apply at home to create community. And again, some of that we've seen in the ICE protests, especially in Minneapolis, and the beauty and the creativity and the spirit that really is so inspiring. You know, I mean, it's caused deaths, obviously, but I think it's also caused changes and a little bit, hopefully, a regulation around what ICE can and can't do. Mm-hmm. And those are very hopeful things. I mean, especially since we worked in, you know, trying to stem the tide of irregular migration or unaccompanied minors leaving. I think, you know, it feels like we still have a lot to give and it feels like there's a lot of community out there And I think that level of community and resilience and love is going to guide us. You know, I think, you know, love always does conquer hate. And so I think we're trying really hard. And I think that something similar to USAID will arise, not in this administration, but I think they're going to find that they're going to need some of that soft diplomacy to do the work that needs to be done. Mm-hmm. And I guess the other thing for me is what I have no regrets about is I'm glad I'm not working for this administration right now. So there's something to be said about making choices based on your ethics and your morals as well and sticking to it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Robin. I think I will leave it there for today. And as I said at the beginning, I think we're going to be meeting each other.
I'm so excited.
Yeah. Or at least talk to each other about all the past days we had in Central America.
And I would love that. I would love that.
Yeah. We do that. Okay. I'll say goodbye for the moment and I'll contact you over WhatsApp. Okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the opportunity. Yeah. I'll talk to you later.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye. Ciao, ciao.
Nach diesem Gespräch unterhalten wir uns noch länger und tauschen uns aus über unsere Zeit in Zentralamerika, sie in Honduras und ich in Nicaragua. Zwischen Erinnerungen und Geschichten entdecken wir gemeinsame Bekannte und versprechen uns, in Kontakt zu bleiben. In diesem Austausch ist etwas Neues entstanden, etwas, das über das einfache Gespräch hinausgeht. Es ist ein Gefühl von Verbindung gewachsen, ein Gefühl einer neuen Freundschaft, ein Gefühl von etwas, was uns weiterträgt, auch wenn alles in diesen letzten Monaten durcheinander geraten ist. Es war für uns beide sehr wertvoll, dass wir uns offen und vertrauensvoll auch über die kritischen Punkte in der Entwicklungszusammenarbeit austauschen konnten, die uns schon lange begleiten. Dabei ging es auch um Themen wie die großen Unterschiede zwischen lokalem und internationalem Personal oder die Frage, wie viel von den eingesetzten Mitteln tatsächlich vor Ort eingesetzt werden. Inmitten dieser schmerzlichen Erfahrungen wird umso deutlicher, wie wichtig es ist, innezuhalten und zu fragen, was wir daraus lernen können. Für eine Entwicklungszusammenarbeit, die vielleicht anders, klarer und vor allem menschlicher weitergehen kann. Vielleicht beginnen Veränderungen genau in solchen Momenten, wenn wir gemeinsam hinschauen, ehrlich miteinander sprechen und den Mut haben, neue Wege zu denken. Und jetzt noch wie immer die beiden Fragen an die ZuhörerInnen. Die erste Frage, wann hast du selbst eine Erfahrung gemacht, in der du plötzlich alles wieder neu anfangen musstest? Und was hat dir geholfen, wieder aufzustehen und weiterzugehen?
Das war Traces of Light, ein Podcast von Elsbeth Horbati, die auf der Suche nach Menschen und Gemeinschaften ist, die in diesen schwierigen Zeiten Mut machen.